Side A, Senate Revenue Committee Agenda, January 28, 1981, 1:30 p.m. Orientation, School Finance, Ron Chastain, Economist, Legislative Revenue Office.
Senator Day left word that he'll be late, so excuse. Steve, do you want to start by talking about the fees and the things in our packet?
Steve Meyer, Legislative Revenue Office. Yesterday, there were several questions brought up on fee increases, other than on the list that was that we were going over yesterday with you. So I had this one or whole packet of pages included in your material today. It's impact of Governor's 1981-83 budget on fee revenues. This is something that the executive department put out sometime in December, I think, after the budget came out, and was probably available to you before, but gets overlooked. So these are then apparently all of the fee revenue changes, other than what was on the other list, the corporations, the what, there was a water increase and the insurance increase, I believe, on our list the other day.
Yes.
And it tells you whether legislation is required or not to increase the fee. There weren't any totals on the last page, but I also might mention that about half of it comes in the education section on pages 5 and 6, mostly higher ed and at the teaching hospital. If you want to look at just one of the big ones and see what's going on there. But I'll give you a couple of totals so that you can jot them down if you like. For the 79-81 estimated revenue column, all of those add up to $299.4 million. And for 81...
Is this the $299.4 million?
79-81 estimated revenue column.
That's 79-81?
Yes.
Okay.
Right, and then the recommended 81-83 sums up to $395.6 million, or about a $96 million increase from one biennium to the next.
I'm confused. What are these totals again?
Just the totals of the two columns that you have on that sheet for all pages.
Oh, okay.
What, on what sheet?
The series of sheets.
Impact of Governor's budget on fee revenues.
Okay.
For those two columns, for all 11 sheets, 16 sheets, excuse me.
That's recommended revenue from fees.
Yes.
I finally decided to write that down, so we can read it again.
81-83?
Both of them, yeah.
Okay, 79-81 estimated, yeah. $299.4 million.
All right.
81-83 recommended, $395.6 million.
Thank you.
$96 million increase. So that will give you the detail.
Do these include all the fees or just the ones in addition to the ones, Mr. Chair, that we had yesterday?
This is in addition to the ones we had yesterday.
Does this include tuition fees?
Yes, it does. Yes, that's on page 5.
Okay. One more.
Senator,
most of these fees, on a lot of these, all of the funds go into the general fund. Actually, they are fees just to support the operation of that particular agency.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Yes. I assume that all of these fee increases were in response to increased costs of administration. The other three fees on the other sheet were part of the governor's revenue raising package. That's why they were separated from this list.
Necessarily be tied to cost changes, would they? I think, in essence, for tuition, they want tuition to pick up a bigger percentage of the total cost.
That may very well be.
Are they aiming at 25% of the total cost?
That could be. They went down to about 22 last time.
Yes, I think so. Okay, so as you look through just a few that have openly announced the percentage increase of in the fees, it's surprising that there's only a $96 million impact or whatever. It you know, you just on the first page, fee increase range from 30 to 80%, 50%, here's one for 70%, you know, 40%, you know, it appears, but I guess when you get to the big ones like tuition, it's only at 15%, so that's per annum.
You have to weight them according to the magnitude.
Senator Monroe.
The bulk of the increase is in two items. The teaching hospital, that's Oregon Medical School. Fee increases of 37 plus million, and then the tuition and fees increase of 32 million. Yeah. Between those two, you got 69 out of the 96.
Yeah. That's the way budgets are.
And those are pretty controversial, both of those.
Yeah. Okay, Steve. Well, thank you very much for that information. On to.
Chairman, would you say then that the raise in these fees is something that one could just expect simply because of the cost of administering these programs? Or do these fees represent the fee portion picking up a greater percent of pay for those services?
I don't think we can say, and I don't think a blanket statement would cover all cases, as I understand it. In some cases, I'm sure that the increases are designed to pick up the full cost of administering the program. And in other cases, as you see down here, fees increase 50% for plumbers and 25% for contractors. The fees haven't been changed since 1973. Apparently, that was designed to be a self-sustaining program, apparently, because they're going to pick up another $300,000 or something. So I'm not sure, and I think, well, when we get people from the administration here, that we want to ask them that if they had a policy, did they make a policy decision that programs, for the most part, would be self-supporting outside of a few, such as the tuition, and what was their policy there? I'd heard 25% on has been a goal that had been established at some time in the past, and that had slipped, and this is an attempt to take it back to them. Okay, Ron, and school finance, or the lack thereof.
Okay. I was mainly planning on talking about the basic school support fund. How that appropriation formula works. You really, really get into the nitty gritty, the details of just what's going to happen. So you'll see the links with the level of funding. Okay, thanks. And the implications of funding and not making any changes. Some of the decisions you're going to be faced with, I also want to cover. I've given you three things in your packet. There's a pamphlet. A booklet, whatever, put out by the Department of Education. It says the Basic School Support Fund, Appropriation and Mechanics of Distribution. It's about the only written explanation of the formula that I know of. So we're gonna work through that briefly in some parts. I'm not gonna bog you down too much in it.
I've always wondered what's going to happen when certain individuals in the Department of Education retire.
Well, I'm not sure.
They're gonna have to transcribe that, because there are very few people when you introduce a complicated problem in school finance, they even know where to begin.
That's right. It's a very small group.
And many times their first response from those who can is an error. And then they say, wait a minute, we forgot something. So I don't know what's going to happen when those people do. I understand that they are having some problem now with special ed because of Jess Fassel's expertise, and he's going to be a consultant to them. But that would be difficult to replace that knowledge.
They retire
parents stay around, you're better off than if they died.
Maybe. We might not pay them anymore.
Mr. Chairman, I can also remember when it was general knowledge in the legislature that there was only one member of the entire legislature that understood equalization, and that was before any of you got here.
And that member's gone.
But he was defeated. The next
voters equalized him.
Right.
That usually happens when you understand.
When you know too much, the voters kind of question, you know.
He did too much. He didn't know too much.
Okay, Ron. I noticed what you talked about, the people retiring. We'll get off that in a minute. But see, the same thing even in the Department of Revenue.
Yes.
Look at that. All the veterans of the reappraisal program in the mid-50s have just, you know, worked through timber and really, really know what's going on. Just moving out. That's interesting. The other two handouts that I have for you are, there's a one-page printout. It shows a... It's a sample. I wanted you to see this. It's a sample of districts that I've selected that I think I can use throughout the session to show what's happening with changes in the formula. We've got some big districts and some little districts, you know, scattered around the state. In this particular example, I've got them arranged in a certain order by one of those abbreviations. This is OPREXPADM, but it's arranged by their operating expenditures per student. It's really a worksheet, a thing for me, but I know I'm going to change that title. So other people will understand what's going on. The way the formula is set up, I can put in, however I change this data, I can put that in one little section of the title. This was my sheet. Anyway, those are representative districts. And the third printout that you have is just for your general information. I wanted a list showing by county, all the school districts in every county with some basic school data. I wanted people to, I thought you would want to know if you have equalization districts in your area, or if you have basic grant districts is the term that's used. And I'll explain those headings. In fact, I think I'm going to give you a written summary to attach to these. It shows you what each abbreviation is. In fact, I think I'll do it right now, just so you, in case you're looking at it as I'm talking along.
Senator Grunstad?
I was just going to say, I thought he was going to see, I was going to give you a written examination.
No.
That's never. Next week.
It's basic data. I've got the county, district name, and type. Type isn't explained for you, but it is explained in the Southern pamphlet from the Department of Education. There are five different types of districts. Five means it's a unified district. Four is a union high school district, grades 9 through 12. Three is a union high school district, grades 7 through 12. Two is an elementary district, grade 1 through 8. And one is an elementary, grade 1 through 6. And having said that, I'm going to look in here and make sure that I got that elementary stripe.
Okay.
So 1 and 2 are elementary districts, 3 and 4 are high school districts, and 5 is a unified.
5
district.
Is a unified.
3 is 7 through 12, and 4 is what, 9 through 12?
9 through 12.
Yes.
That makes sense.
And 5 is unified. Next column says ADM June total. ADM is average daily membership. And that's the average number of children in the school district in a given reporting period. The Department of Education uses two main reporting periods. They'll look at the June 30th and December 31st. And this is just at the end of, this is the June total, the June 30th total, average number of children in that school district.
Okay, Ron, for the purposes of figuring support, what ADM, what date is that final? Is that a projection based on the previous year plus expectations, or is that simply a hard count based on last year? And is there a lag?
There is a lag. Basic school support money is a reimbursement program.
Okay.
You're always reimbursing what the actual costs were, number of students in the preceding
last year.
So this is. Most of the data I have is for this fiscal year, the 1980-81 fiscal year, so that's going to be the June 30th, 1980 number of children.
Okay. So in real terms, that's why we're in, that's why we always face this dilemma of them wanting to know, and we can't tell them, because it's actually reimbursing them for past costs, and they're budgeting it for future expenditure.
That's right. We'd like to know what all the actual costs and students are this year to make all your estimates for next year.
Mr. Chairman, I'm having trouble with your average daily membership taken June 30th. In most schools, wouldn't that be zero?
It's for the quarter ending June 30th. It's the...
Well, I guess the real question I'm asking is, you surely don't figure in whatever you're... I take it this is a mean you're talking about that you get. Okay, that M means mean, maybe. Anyway, you're not taking days whenever they're not having school.
That's correct. They're just taking the days in which they're in the period for which they do have school and dividing that.
Divided by the total number of days and which one would expect the students to be in the classroom.
That's correct. On page 3 of this pamphlet, when we talk about basic grant, they explain, it is explained in here, the average daily membership reflects the average number of children attending school during a given report period, and it's derived by a formula of the total days membership of resident pupils, that's the days present plus the days absent, divided by the days actually taught.
Well, in other words, it's not just in school, but the ones that potentially might be in school.
Yes.
Because we count the days absent.
That's correct.
But we have, really what it is take the enrollment and then the expectation for the attendance based on that enrollment. See, I was under the impression that if they were absent, they cost the school money.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't making the connection there.
No, they can, because aren't, I do believe absenteeism can cost the district money eventually, because you take an average of those absent or something, and I think it can cost them.
I was having that impression.
I was too. Seemed to me that that's when the school districts really got interested in.
I'm not sure there hasn't been a change. I'll have to check on that. But I think, looking at this, at the formula, it looks like they're saying, here's how many children we're teaching, or we're geared up to teach for the school year, and there's this many present, this many absent from their normal enrollment. So I...
You don't reduce the membership by the number of absent.
No, not according to
the formula, you wouldn't.
Maybe
you don't define them as absent if they've moved out of the district or something. That would make a difference.
It probably has changed. It was originally in there because it's a reimbursement program for actual students, and it was probably changed because of the fact that the school district is geared up to teach that many, and if two are absent per class, it doesn't lower their costs.
I remember going to school, they'd take a roll every day because it meant to determine how much money the school district was going to get.
Exactly.
And I don't,
when I taught,
I don't believe that's the case.
Not included in that formula.
Well, anyway, that's the ADM. When I'm using this term ADM, and I'll try and say average number of children, but that's what we're talking about, average number of children. The next column is operating expenditures per ADM. That's an average, and by operating expenditures, I'm trying to get at the normal school costs, the normal cost of operating, of teaching those children, exclusive of transportation costs. I've got a list of some of the items and, you know, main categories of operating expenditures. But they have instruction costs for the regular program, your teacher salaries and all. Instruction costs for special programs, pupil support services, instructional staff support, your clerical help, the general administration support, maybe that's your clerical help, school administration support, business support, central support, other support. And then some net payments. They've got some items netted out for when they make transfers to other districts make transfers in. But in the concept is your normal costs of educating the students.
Minus,
it's not your capital costs.
Minus transportation.
But minus transportation.
So it'd be minus transportation and minus capital expenditures.
That's right.
Basically.
And that's an average per student.
And what I've given you here is an average per student.
2,000.
Averages are used in the formula in a few places, and also it's a nice way to take care of these, well, it's hard to compare districts unless you're doing it on a per student basis, that's all. You've got a few districts that are, they call them small, they have small schools in them, and you might have a district where they, you know, there's a lot of cost involved in educating three or four children.
Yeah, that'd be Lake County.
There's one, there's an 8,000.
Yeah, there is, I think eight, there's one over 8,000, which is the maximum. One was Plush District, I think has about 7,000, which also finds, notice that they have very few students in those.
Five
that,
kids.
Yeah, that's going to skew
kids
things.
Five kids in the whole school district?
School, I'm not sure the particulars, but they may be raising money or paying money to
send them to
send
a boarding
them someplace
school.
Else, or yeah, they may. I'm not sure exactly what's going on with those districts.
Harney and Double D or whatever it is has ADM 2.3.
Big district.
What's that?
Harney County Double D or something. 2B has ADM 2.3.
Double O, I think it's 00028. Yeah, 2.3.
That's, are those figures in hundreds?
No, those are actual dollars. It's an average in actual dollars. The June total is the actual number of children.
Two students?
Yes, it's 2.3.
Type 2, that's the elementary 1 through 8. So they're all in the same grade, you got to elect.
That's right.
I've had students I felt like were 0.3 students.
He was like, what's that, two kids and a dog? 2.3?
No, there are students that come out 0.3.
The next column is the true cash value per student.
Oh, okay.
True cash value. And by that, we're talking about, that's the property value in the district.
Can I?
But there's really an adjustment to that.
Yeah.
Senator Monroe?
One of the things that we were talking about the other day, was Senator Day in particular was discussing it, was that the districts that are behind in their assessment, might that affect that figure, true cash value per student?
They would be relatively poorer than other districts and get more equalization money if they're behind.
An advantage.
Might there be an advantage for them to drag their feet because they would get more basic?
Yes.
Well,
they're going to have a higher tax rate.
Only. Yeah, that's. I don't think there's an advantage to the assessor in who represent is elected countywide to help one school district undo another school district in the same county through equalization.
But equalization isn't by county anymore. It's strictly on a statewide basis.
Well, each district's true cash value though plays into their into their system.
But if all of the districts within one particular county were underassessed, all of the districts in that county would receive more basic school support than they would otherwise be entitled to, and as a result would have a relative advantage over other districts in other counties all over the state. Isn't that true?
It's true, yeah.
And therefore, they would have a relatively lower property tax because, assuming that when basic goes up, property taxes come down, some people don't buy that assumption, and vice versa.
That's why the Department
of
Revenue has
to
watch these.
I think. I don't know if there's anything we can do about it, but we need to be aware of it.
In most cases, the assessor has a differing relationship with every district out there to the point that you would think that he or she does not get along with at least one school administrator somewhere, to the point where I wouldn't see a conspiracy like that forming.
I wasn't, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't implying that there would be any kind of a conspiracy
but
at
just
all.
That it's there.
That the assessor would be involved in any kind of misjudgment or anything. I'm just saying that in counties like Marion County, that are, for whatever reasons, behind in their assessments.
And I think Multnomah County is.
Yeah, that the farther you fall, that there might be economically advantageous in terms of the basic school support formula.
There's been debate in Salem Joint District, and by joint district meaning over county lines, saying, you know, how is the Polk County property appraised compared to the Marion County? People are arguing that
I've got it right out here between Marion and Linn County, out of Mill City.
All right. I've got it at the Greater Albany School District in Benton and Linn County as well. In fact, they're paying a different rate this year because one assessor is using an estimate and the other is using actual. And the people in Benton County, I believe, are paying 12 cents per thousand more for the same district than the people in Linn County. Probably unconstitutional, but
maybe when you get into the property tax area, you can explore the sales ratio studies that are done that the department uses to make sure these districts are up to where they should be.
When we raise the question as to why that's happening, the legislature is blamed for passing the tax program, which caused the rolls to be delayed, and so that's the excuse that's been given, and it's probably legitimate. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman? Just looking at this form too, every school district in Marion County, except for one very small one, is an equalization district too. If the districts were not equalization districts, then it wouldn't make any difference.
That's correct.
But since all of them, except that one tiny district, are equalization districts, it would make a difference in that particular instance.
Again, this is the property value within the district. There have to be adjustments made if you've got an elementary district and a high school district. You want them to be treated like a unified district. So, really, on page 6 of this handout from the Department of Education, you'll see how the property value of districts are adjusted for type of school district. You wouldn't want to count all the property value for the elementary district and all the property value for the high school district in deciding how well off they are if you're going to compare them to unified districts. So an adjustment is made where you'll see that an elementary district from grades 1 through 6 will get 50% of the true cash value of the district. It's just to treat it fairly.
Okay. What if they're K through 6?
Still the
same. K through 6 is still going to be the 50% of the true cash value. It's going to be that type. With a kindergarten, they're still going to call it a type 1 district, and the statute is set up for type 1.
But they're going to have a higher ADM and other things.
There'll be a slight bias.
The bill does call, I think, for a change in the weighting of kindergarten children.
I think they're giving a 0.5.
Yeah, that would change the formula a bit. Would that just affect just equalization? Would it affect flat grants?
It would affect both.
It's certainly going to affect the amount of money they get.
But it seems to me that there'd be a relative advantage there for districts that don't have kindergartens.
If they got the same amount.
Comparing a 1 through 6 district to a K through 6 district, and that both get to count half of the true cash value. Isn't that right?
Yep, you have an year more students.
Yep, more students. Yep.
We're going to have to fix that.
But on the other hand, there is a disadvantage that they aren't having 30% of their costs picked up from the flat grant plus any equalization money for operating a kindergarten. People have argued in Salem, since Salem doesn't have kindergartens, that your income tax dollars are supporting kindergartens throughout the state, and yet you're going out to a private, you're paying them for a private kindergarten. So
they could fix that real quick. All they have to do is have a kindergarten.
That's all they have to do. I think they're going to vote on it again. Next to the last column.
That sounds like my wife's logic. We could save $100 by going to Hawaii tomorrow.
Inflation, right?
I've heard that somewhere before. That just rang a bell.
When my wife comes back really from shopping, I ask her how much money she saved me today. Yeah.
If you really want to save money, go spend some. Zing. Next.
The last two columns.
I keep forgetting.
I want to hear what this grant total.
The grant total per student is the total amount of money given by the state for basic school support. It's the basic grant, which I'm going to explain to you. It's your equalization. It's your transportation. Okay. It's your growth and decline money. It's everything from the basic school support fund that goes to that district. In this column, it's on a per student basis. I just wanted you to see that there's quite a difference.
That's what I want to ask you about.
Some were...
I thought the intent of the equalization was to make those similar, those amounts similar.
When I get into equalization, I'll show you that it depends
sorry,
on two things. No, it's a good question, but it's you're getting right to the nub of the equalization thing. It's depending on property value and the program level that the local people want to support. So the local residents may not want to be anywhere near the statewide average. They may want to spend only $1,000 per student instead of $2,000 per student.
And isn't that what we do with equalization money, is bring it up to the statewide average?
No, we don't. We bring it up to whatever we will give them equalization money depending on their relative ability to support a given program. And that's not going to be clear yet until I actually get up on the board and show you just how that formula is working.
Yeah.
I'm going to address that particular
issue. It's simply an attempt to soften the blow of their relative poorness.
That's right.
And in their own ability to make themselves whole. That is to can we tie this in just very briefly? How much more time? Is there quite a bit more time we're going to have to go into tomorrow? Probably. The thing is, we reach a point.
An accordion here.
Yeah, we reach a point where formulas and things, it's, I think, best to take it in and let it set for a while as opposed to going on into another completely different area. But my question is this. Can you briefly tell us now that districts are formulating budgets for next year now, election dates, they have six election dates, and they're choosing election dates and trying to formulate a budget, and here we are going to be facing changes in the formula on how they're reimbursed. So the law, as I understand it, tells them to use last year's figure on state support. Is that correct?
Yes.
In formulating their budget?
That's what Lloyd asked you.
Okay. So the Department of Education has to give them last year's figure for them to use. So if they go out and we're here late and these decisions are not made until, let's say, July, those who have approved budgets, then if they got hit with a large decrease, they might have to go for a special levy or a supplemental budget later.
I believe the last year's figure cut into the amount.
It's dollars, isn't
it's
it?
Dollars.
That would cover it.
I think that takes care of that.
Lloyd would have to use, if there's been no appropriation made, you have to use last year's appropriation. He's going to have new data, new cost data and all. So he'll be pumping in that new data with the last year's figure. That will give a distorted picture for all your equalization districts.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
That's your base figure being correct.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have all the property value. You didn't know what your basic grant district's going to have probably the right figures. An equalization district, Beaverton or Salem.
But you're still creating a problem for them because if we make certain changes in that formula, they're still going to be affected even though they go on the past dollars. You see, they're still going to have a problem of determining just what they're going to do when they cast a budget. If they cast it where it is, obviously they receive heavy growth and they're going to want to know what they count on.
I believe Lloyd's also giving them a run under the governor's proposal too. So use your own judgment.
Mm-hmm. Chairman, Senator Monroe. Another problem that school districts are facing is that many school districts, for example, one where I teach, passed a new tax base and they passed a level high enough to fund for 2 years so that they wouldn't have to go back to the voters. In fact, said if you approve this, there's enough money in this new tax base to cover for the next 2 years. And now, if they don't get the basic school support up to, you know, the formula that was passed last session or some reasonable proximity of that, they're talking about having to go back for a supplemental budget election, and they're afraid that the voters are going to really rebel.
Cut their throats.
I would cut the budget.
That's probably what would happen.
Well, that's certainly.
Yeah. It's going to eliminate my program.
Oh, I see. Okay. What district is it? They call that a special transportation factor.
What about the complications of the A and B ballot if they don't know that information?
Of course it will.
One of them.
They'd be able to carry that on their A ballot, wouldn't they, under those circumstances? Even we had, wouldn't they be able to carry that?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Only 6%?
Problem with the A ballot is it's based upon old figures, and in districts that are growing, they're always behind.
Well, don't give it.
Always puts them behind because it's based on a previous year.
The only people that are all right are people who have declined enough to make up.
Sure, if you have a growth.
An A ballot makes sense.
For the inflation factor.
Because the growth rate is between a year ago and 2 years ago.
I said, we're in a world of hurry, aren't we, Dick?
That's right.
I feel worse.
It's gloomy.
I'm feeling bad.
You know, I'd like to meet up. Well, I'd like to meet up on the top of the building, so at least if the fog sets in, we still get some sunshine.
I don't know. I don't think we want to meet up. Some of us might jump off.
Hey, you've not only got that the appropriation level to worry about, you got the split, how much the first year versus the second year. Then you got to decide if you want to. You know, is this a short-term phenomenon or long-term about the bad revenue picture where you want to change a formula or not change a formula? Permanent or short-term solution? The
annual session looks better, doesn't it?
Well, the problem with how you're ever going to catch up, regardless of how long-term it is.
This is one other thing that probably should be addressed in this session, if you can anyways, is problem stability. I'm thinking of in the first year of the session when you have the equalization districts just not knowing what's going to happen. You wonder if some of the schools, I suspect some of the school district superintendents would rather know a pretty good idea what they're going to get from year to year, even if it
hurts them.
Even if it hurts a little bit.
I think so you're right, because they can't, that fluctuation is a killer worse than if they know what the
bad news is.
Yeah. Boy, you're sure getting the medal in that. We start playing with that, and man, we get the, that whole formula has been cast by keeping various regions of our state together.
Every formula here is that way.
Well, I know, but that's worse than that.
Did I hear you say today that we're not going to... I was sitting here with bated breath waiting to hear him explain the equalization formula, how one arrives at it. Did I hear you say we're not going to do that today?
Of how you arrive at equalization?
Yeah, that was what where he is right now.
Well, it'd be your pleasure. We could go into that if you could do it in 10 or 12 minutes.
Well, we do it tomorrow.
Yeah. Go ahead.
We don't have anything to do today, April 15th anyway, do we?
I hope we do.
Yes, we're going to do something for April 15th. And maybe
it's fun. It's
in people's will.
Do we have any other bills?
It's a fun thing to do.
Well, we have a few bills here.
What?
It takes more than 10 minutes, believe me.
I'm not sure it does for me. You guys go on. He's going to explain it to me in 10 minutes.
It would probably... can you do it in 10?
Yeah, I can go through it. I can go through it in 10. I'm not sure you'll really understand it in 10. If you want to take 10 minutes, it may help for tomorrow. Or I can...
Okay, we'll adjourn. We'll adjourn, and those who want to get a preview of tomorrow can stay. Okay?
You got to start on it.
Okay.
We'll start from scratch tomorrow.
I'm in the mood today. Tomorrow I may be a
Tomorrow okay. She can help all of us.